Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents That Boston Man by Janet Daly. Narrated by Shayna Somerville. Chapter 1. The din of the newspaper office was steady. Telephones ringing, the clatter of typewriters and voices, an unceasing hum of activity. Sitting on the edge of a desk in an area partitioned away from the rest of the staff workers in the room, Lexi Templeton was impervious to the background noises. A paper cup of black coffee was in one hand, and a half-finished Danish pastry in the other. Her attention was on her co-worker, Ginger Frankson, who was also her roommate and friend. Lexi veiled the amusement that glittered in her blue eyes as she thought, not for the first time, that Ginger seemed the epitome of the fresh, innocent Midwestern type, which she was. 2 years older than Ginger's 22, Lexi felt at times like Ginger's mother instead of a friend, and at other times simply irritated by Ginger's traditional outlook. She studied the slim, blue-jeaned figure of her roommate pacing about the alcove, long and beautiful corn-silk hair flowing past her shoulders. There was little makeup to detract from Ginger's wholesomely attractive features, that all-American look of pure honey that gathered men like bees. Ginger rattled on in a troubled and despairing voice with a quaint Midwestern accent, but it was her words that were making Lexi lose her taste for the pastry in her hand. A sideways glance caught the amused but tolerant look of the third member of the impromptu gathering, Sherry Sullivan, whose desk Lexi was sitting on, was considerably older than both of the others, but she was hardly the mother figure of the group. Sophisticated, chic, always dressed to the teeth, Sherry was a blonde, too, thanks to the expert skill of Boston's best and most sought-after hairdresser. Despite all Sherry's worldly airs and hard-bitten glamour, Lexi often felt sorry for the woman. She so obviously clung to the image of youth while seeking status and prestige with greedy hands. They were definitely an incongruous threesome. Lexi had often wondered what inner needs the three of them fulfilled in each other. Obviously, there was something. They congregated each day at Sherry's private desk for morning coffee, Ginger coming from her lowly position in the sports department, and Lexi from her fast-writing post in political news. Sherry had the society and gossip column in Boston. "And Bob was so angry because I wasn't in when he called last night," Ginger continued her lament that had been going on for the past several minutes. Lexi wrapped a paper napkin around the rest of her Danish pastry and tossed it into the wastebasket beside the desk. "I suppose you apologized for going out to do your laundry," she commented dryly. "Well, I was sorry that I wasn't there when he called," Ginger defended. "Honestly, Ginger." Exasperation riddled Lexi's response. "How can you let yourself become a doormat for that man?" "I am not a doormat," came the protest. "He wanted to talk to me, and I wanted to talk to him. We just didn't make the connection, that's all. But that has nothing to do with my problem. What Bob is really upset about is this weekend. I can't make up my mind whether I should go with him to Cape Cod or not, and I'm afraid if I don't go, he'll ask somebody else." "Let him," Lexi declared in disgust. "Bob Jeffers is a sexist, and you'd be well rid of him. He wants you at his beck and call, never vice versa."
"I think you hate men, Lexi," Sherry observed in a husky, cultured voice she had cultivated to perfection over the years.
"I like men well enough," Lexi said, denying the allegation. "If I can find any that will really treat me like an equal. You should have been with me yesterday when I interviewed that new candidate for Congress and heard him explain why he didn't have any women holding the responsible positions in his campaign. He gave that old song and dance about the difficulties of a single woman traveling in the company of so many men and problems of a married woman leaving her husband and family behind while she's on the campaign trail." Lexi stared angrily at the black liquid in her cup. Why is it that a man is never asked how he manages to combine marriage and a career successfully, but a woman always gets that question thrown at her?
Excellent point,
the older woman agreed with a throaty laugh. And speaking of careers, Lexi warmed to her subject with a vengeance. Stop and think about the way men have taken over. Women always did the cooking until men discovered they could make money at it. Voila, now they're chefs. The same is true with sewing and clothes. Men found out there was money in that, and now our fashion designers are almost exclusively male. The same holds true with hairdressers. It used to be a woman's job, but men are making a fortune at it now. The list just goes on and on and on.
It's a pity we can't convince them they can make money having babies,
Sherry offered in a dryly amused voice. Isn't it, though? Lexi murmured, impatiently brushing a lock of tightened hair from her forehead. No matter what men say, secretly they want a woman to assume the traditional role of wife and mother and helpmate.
I don't think that's true,
Ginger inserted. Believe me, it is. Lexi's head bobbed with positive certainty. A man may tell you that he feels a woman should work if she wants to, but what he really means is some other woman. Not his wife. Men are such shallow creatures. They want women to soothe their furrowed brows, to pander to their insatiable male egos, to tell them what great lovers they are, and the woman's reward is the so-called pleasure of their company. Her gaze strayed to the tear sheet on Sherry's desktop, a photograph of a man dominating the page. And he's the worst of the lot, Lexi accused.
Rome Lockwood?
Sherry exclaimed in disbelief, false eyelashes intensifying her round-eyed look. The grainy newspaper photograph didn't do the man justice, but Lexi had seen him too many times in person to be deceived by the picture. She had never met him personally, only observed him at political functions. That had been enough to form her opinion. Lean, dark features were molded into a stunningly handsome male face. Jet black hair grew with rakish carelessness above the wide, intelligent forehead. Equally dark eyes glittered from the paper, a knowing light in their depths as if he knew the power of his attraction. And that mouth caught by the photograph in a disarming smile? More than once, Lexi had seen it work its charm, smoothly and subtly and successfully. Yes, Rome Lockwood, she repeated. God, that name sounds like something Hollywood would make up.
He isn't a politician, Sherry remarked. So how did you come to meet him?
Political functions often become social functions, Lexi answered, again with a trace of contempt. And as you know, no social function is considered a success unless Rome Lockwood attends. Have you ever seen him with the same woman twice in a row? Sherry thought for a moment.
I can't say that I have. Not twice in a row. No one has even come close to hooking him yet, although a lot have tried. Desperately. Which is probably why his black book has so many names. He probably finds safety in numbers.
If I were Rome Lockwood, I'd be worried, Lexi observed. Why? Ginger walked to the desk to look at the photograph, claiming the other's attention. A glimpse of the man in the picture made her add, With looks like that, he'll never have to worry about the supply running out.
He should worry that some of his many women might get together and compare notes. I'm sure he finds safety in numbers because it conceals the fact that he isn't man enough to keep one woman satisfied.
Her caustic statement was initially greeted by silence. Then Sherry released a short, stunned laugh and reached for a scratch pad and pencil.
That's priceless, Lexi, she declared. May I quote that in my column?
Lexi hesitated, then shrugged diffidently.
I don't care.
Sherry hurriedly wrote it down, rings cluttering her fingers and long nails polished in a fashionably gaudy purple-red.
The whole town will be buzzing when they read this. Everybody will be talking about my column,
she murmured aloud, smiling with feline satisfaction when she read what she had written.
I think that's a horrible thing for you to say, Ginger accused. You're probably just jealous, Lexi, because you aren't one of the girls he takes out.
You're way off base. Lexi gave a pitying look to her roommate. I'm not the least bit jealous. All his good looks and charm can't change the kind of man he is, and I know his type. There'll never be just one woman in his life. He's always going to have to prove what a man he is by stringing out a long line of conquests. The disgusting thing is that all the other men look up to him, envy him. They refer to him as a man's man. It's what they would all like to be.
A lot of women agree,
Sherry pointed out. A lot of women are fools, Lexi replied. They cherish fantasies that they'll be the one to catch him.
And why not?
Sherry argued. He's tall, dark, and handsome. Not to mention wealthy. And he's a born Casanova. Lexi drained her coffee and tossed the cup in the wastebasket with an air of finality.
And you're a born cynic.
Sherry smiled. I prefer it to being a born innocent, she retorted, straightening from the desk and glancing at her wristwatch. I'd better be getting back to my desk. Stan is bound to be wanting me by now, she said, referring to her editor.
I'd better go too, Ginger stated. See you later, Sherry.
She followed Lexi as she left the thinly partitioned alcove.
Neither one of you said what you thought I should do about this weekend. Should I go with Bob?
I can't tell you whether or not you should go.
Lexi frowned. It's your decision, Ginger. Not mine.
I don't feel right about going.
The girl sighed, flicking her long, straight blonde hair away from her collar. Then don't go.
But if I don't, Bob won't ask me out anymore.
If that's the kind of guy he is, then you're better off without him.
That's easy for you to say, but I don't want to get the reputation of being a prude.
Meaning that Lexi had. But it didn't bother Lexi at all. The ones who called her that were the ones she wouldn't have dated if they were the last men on Earth. They were the ones who fell into the general category headed by the likes of Rome Lockwood. With the striking combination of copper red hair and startling blue eyes, Lexi didn't lack for invitations to go out. Thus, she had her choice of companions, and she chose those whose company she would enjoy and not have to fight off. A few times her choice had proved to be wrong, with her idea of a good time and her date's idea clashing. With an attitude like that, Ginger? Lexi offered as they reached the hallway where they would separate to go to their different departments. You could wind up with the reputation of being easy, and that can lead to a lot more heartbreak than being called a prude. Ginger looked skeptical but didn't argue.
I'm meeting Bob after work, so I'll see you later on tonight at the apartment.
What about supper?
Don't get anything for me.
Lexi's desk was barely distinguishable from the rows of others just like it. The typewriter, files, and clutter of papers on top of it half covered the standard black telephone. The file cabinet, desk, and typewriter table fenced in her chair. As Lexi squeezed through the gap between the typewriter and the short file cabinet, the man at the desk facing hers glanced up. Ralph Pulaski was a staff reporter 20 years her senior, and inclined to laziness.
You're back, he observed. Mike was here a minute ago looking for you.
Lexi had expected her absence from the desk to be noted. Very little escaped Mike Farragut's attention. The little wheels on her chair legs squeaked as she pulled it away from the desk. What did he want? Her co-worker shrugged.
Just asked where you were. I told him I thought you'd gone for some coffee.
I can't imagine his reaction to that, she murmured dryly. Ralph Pulaski smiled.
You know Mike. He went off grumbling about women, coffee, and gossip.
And of course, you agreed with him. Lexi accused him jokingly.
Of course.
Her fellow reporter grinned. Chauvinist, she taunted, and drew the expected laugh. The phone rang at his desk. He answered it, then cupped a hand over the mouthpiece.
I forgot. I think Mike left something on your desk, he said, then resumed his conversation with the telephone caller.
Sitting down, Lexi quickly skimmed through the papers scattered haphazardly over her desktop. One practically leaped from among the others, demanding her attention. It was the story she had just written and turned into Mike not more than an hour ago. She sighed when she saw what was left of it after Mike's ruthless pencil had gone over it. She leaned back in her chair and began reading through the changes and corrections. After reworking the story, she submitted it to her editor again. Mike read it through and nodded his approval. Words of praise were the last things Lexi expected from him, and she didn't receive any. But the announcement that he was giving her a byline on the story was ample reward. The following afternoon, as she was leaving for the day, she passed Ralph Pulaski in the hall. He'd been out on assignment all day and was just coming in to write up the story.
"What are you trying to do?"
was his greeting.
"Make a name for yourself?"
She laughed, guessing he had seen the story with her byline in the morning edition of the newspaper.
"Jealous?" she teased.
The elevator doors were just closing, and Lexi hurried to beat them.
"Don't work too hard, Ralph,"
she mocked as she slipped inside the elevator. The good mood didn't last long. Her roommate Ginger was at their apartment when Lexi arrived home. She was still in the throes of indecision about spending the weekend with her boyfriend, Bob. Lexi simply couldn't sympathize with her roommate's dilemma, but it was the only subject Ginger wanted to talk about. She discussed it fixing dinner, after dinner, and while washing the dinner dishes. By then, Lexi's patience had worn out, and she exploded.
"I don't care what you do, Ginger."
Her hands were on her hips, a damp dish towel clamped in her fingers.
"Either make up your mind or shut up. I'm tired of hearing about it."
Her roommate's guileless face was incapable of concealing anything. The hurt expression that Lexi had inflicted transformed Ginger's, and tears glistened in her eyes. The expression on Ginger's face made Lexi think of a puppy that had just been scolded severely. Without uttering a sound, Ginger turned from the sink and dashed to her bedroom.
"Damn,"
Lexi breathed, and tossed the towel on the kitchen counter. She felt like an insensitive brute, and was angry for feeling guilty at speaking the truth. Ginger remained in her bedroom for the rest of the evening. Twice, Lexi walked to the door to apologize and make peace. Each time, she was kept from knocking by the realization that Ginger was indulging in a childish sulk, and by the feeling that she had been in the right to demand that Ginger make up her mind. The next morning, Lexi was dressed and walking out the door when Ginger finally came out of her bedroom. Lexi paused, wondering whether she should make a comment about the previous night or let the matter rest. Finally, she chose the middle ground. "The coffee is made. I'll see you at work," she said as she walked out the door. She didn't see Ginger again until mid-morning, when she glanced up to find her roommate standing in front of her desk. Rouge had been applied to the pale cheeks with a heavy hand, and Ginger's eyes seemed unnaturally bright.
"I've decided that I'm going to Cape Cod with Bob this weekend. I thought you'd like to know."
Ginger's announcement had a defensive, almost challenging ring to it. "Bob will be happy to hear that," was the only comment Lexi made. Personally, Lexi thought her roommate was making a big mistake, but she kept it to herself. Ginger was already aware that she didn't like Bob. There was no need for Lexi to voice her disapproval and put more of a strain on their relationship.
"What time will you be off work tonight?"
Ginger asked after a second's hesitation.
"I thought I'd fix a pizza."
"That sounds good," Lexi replied, accepting the peace offering. "I don't think I'll be late. I'll let you know if it looks like I will be."
"Okay," Talk to you later.
Ginger walked away, her mouth curving into a fragile smile at the truce she had achieved. With a sigh, Lexi turned back to her typewriter. There were some girls who simply had to learn the truth about certain men the hard way, and Ginger was one of them, she decided. Luckily, she hadn't. She'd known about it since childhood.
There you are, Lexi.
Sherry Sullivan's familiar voice interrupted Lexi's thoughts.
Just the person I was looking for.
She glanced up in surprise. Although she often stopped by Sherry's office, the older woman rarely, if ever, came to hers. Lexi had always suspected that it was a case of status. When a person had their own column, less established reporters were to call on them, and not the other way around.
You were looking for me?
She said with some curiosity.
Yes, I was.
Sherry glanced over Lexi's shoulder to read the partially written story in her typewriter.
Do you have a few minutes, or are you under a deadline for this piece?
I almost have it wrapped up. I can spare a few minutes, Lexi said.
What is it?
Your comment about Rome Lockwood created quite a sensation.
Shrewd eyes steadily held Lexi's puzzled look.
My comment? Lexi repeated.
The one I quoted in my column the other day about Rome Lockwood not being man enough to keep one woman satisfied.
Sherry reminded her. It had completely slipped Lexi's mind.
Oh, yes, she said, nodding. I'm glad for you that you got a lot of response from your readers.
Believe me, I did, honey.
A faintly smug smile curved the scarlet mouth.
I was at a cocktail party last night and everyone was murmuring about it. The remark was positively fantastic. It titillated everyone's interest.
You said it would?
Yes.
Sherry dismissed that as being too obvious to warrant a comment. What I need now is another quote like that to keep generating the interest.
You mean from me?
Lexi laughed faintly. I'm sorry. I wish I had a ready supply of them at my fingertips, but that one came strictly out of the blue.
Surely you can come up with another,
the blonde coaxed. Honestly, I wish I could, but bright quips just aren't my line. She shook her head apologetically, half amused by Sherry's persistence. The columnist wasn't deterred. Sitting in the straight-backed chair beside Lexi's desk, she took out a pencil and notepad from her oversized handbag.
I won't give up so quickly. Rome Lockwood is news any time, and when people mention his name, they're going to mention my column in the same breath.
Sherry insisted with the tenacity of a bulldog.
Tell me something about the women he's seen with,
she prompted. There was a helpless shrug of her shoulders as Lexi tried to comply.
I don't know anything about them. They're just your usual assortment of your wealthier society girls, jet-setters, Bryn Mawr graduates and all that, with an occasional model thrown in to add color.
Why do you think he's so popular? Why is he regarded as such a catch?
You said it yourself. He's handsome and rich and single. Of course, without the money, he wouldn't be as sought after as he is,
Lexi qualified.
Without money, what would he seem to you?
Sherry questioned. The modern-day equivalent of a gigolo, probably, she answered, and Sherry's pencil flashed across the paper.
He's regarded by many as an excellent businessman.
Sherry glanced up from her jottings.
Really? All he does is manage the family's holdings. His father made all the money. The only thing Rome Lockwood has to do is spend it.
Lexi returned caustically.
I'm told that he's very astute about making investments.
Sherry appeared to argue with the assertion.
No doubt you were told that by the businesses Rome Lockwood has invested in. They aren't the ones to accuse him of making unwise investments, are they?
Being a feminist as well as a political reporter, What do you think his views are regarding women's liberation and equal opportunity?
Lexi couldn't resist smiling at the question. I'm sure he believes in equal opportunity, although I imagine his version of it is that he'll go out with a blonde, brunette, or redhead. Her telephone rang, and Lexi missed the flashing smile of satisfaction from Sherry as she answered it.
This is Lexi Templeton.
The classily dressed blonde rose from her chair, saying to Lexi in a pseudo-whisper,
Thanks a lot. See you later.
With a wave of a beringed hand, Sherry left her to take the phone call in private. If it hadn't been for one of the other staff members, Lexi wouldn't have known that Sherry had quoted anything of their conversation in her column. She was one of those newspaper reporters who never reads the newspaper, but her comments regarding Rome Lockwood were primed, meted out as tidbits over the following 10 days, thus ensuring Sherry of daily readers anxious to see if she said anything about Rome Lockwood. After a few days of Lexi's comments about the man becoming a source of gossip even within the newspaper, a few members of the staff thought she was going too far, but mostly the reaction was just good-natured ribbing that Lexi took in stride. The little cafe next to the building housing the newspaper office was crowded when Lexi entered it a little past noon. There were a lot of familiar faces among the diners, since its nearness made it the logical luncheon place for reporters.
Hey, Lexi!
One of the reporters who usually worked the police beat called.
What's the latest word about Rome Lockwood?
She just smiled and shook her head, red gold curls dancing about her neck. You'll have to read Sherry's column and find out for yourself, Hank. I'm not going to give you any exclusive. The others at his table laughed and began talking among themselves. Lexi's attention had already been diverted back to her original problem, finding an empty chair in the crowded restaurant. Then she saw a man motioning her to join him. Gary Dunbar, a feature writer for the paper and a quiet man she had dated and lunched with often in the past. She made her way across the room to his table and the empty chair opposite his. I was about to decide I'd have to order a sandwich to go and take it back to the office. Lexi slid into the chair with a grateful smile. Thanks for letting me join you. He half rose politely out of his chair as she sat down. A lock of baby fine brown hair fell across his brow, and he self-consciously pushed it back into place. There was a gentle strength in his tanned yet faintly ruddy features, and Lexi was suddenly reminded of how much she liked him.
I was going to stop by your desk to see if you were free for lunch,
Gary said. The waitress stopped, handed Lexi a menu, and automatically filled the cup in front of her with coffee before hurrying on.
It's probably a good thing that you didn't,
Lexi replied, opening the menu to glance at the list of food she almost knew by heart. I was tied up on the telephone. If you'd waited for me, we wouldn't have found a place to sit.
It's usually full during the lunch hours,
he agreed. A plate of hamburger and fries was set in front of him, and the busy waitress turned to take Lexi's order. I'll have a bacon and tomato sandwich, no lettuce, butter instead of mayonnaise, on white bread not toasted, she requested. With a curt nod, the woman was gone, and Lexi returned her attention to Gary. Go ahead and eat, she prompted. Heaven only knows how long my order will be in the kitchen, and there's no sense in letting your food get cold. Gary hesitated, then reluctantly began to eat his sandwich. Between bites, he said,
You're really creating a stir around town.
You mean about Lockwood?
She sipped at her coffee.
You're being pretty hard on the guy, aren't you?
I just call it the way I see it. Lexi shrugged, indifferent to the vague criticism in his words, then smiled. Besides, it sells newspapers.
And makes a name for Sherry Sullivan, who already possesses an inflated sense of her own importance to journalism,
he remarked. She works hard at her career and has for some time. As far as Lexi was concerned, she was stating a fact and not defending her friend. She's earned the right to some recognition. A plate was set in front of her by a rushing waitress.
Just a minute!
Lexi called her back and returned the plate with its sandwich.
I don't want the bread toasted.
The waitress accepted it with a grimace of impatience and a look that said Lexi was being fussy.
Do you know, I've never...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?